Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to The Week in Philly. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, and I'm filling in for Matt Leon, talking with KYW News Radio's reporters about the stories making headlines in the region this week, including a tragic parking lot collapse in Grays Ferry.
It's not clear exactly what went wrong causing the chain reaction.
Mike DiNardo tells us what it was like on the scene. The massive crowds for America's 250th anniversary events might not be so massive.
Gas prices, tariffs, these are the factors that in the past have led to flat travel.
City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb explains the disappointing predictions for summer tourism. A legendary Philly concert venue shut down.
The liquor license expired. Three bartenders were arrested.
Matt Coughlin has the latest on the former World Cafe Live. The Latino community reckons with allegations against historic migrant rights advocate Cesar Chavez.
There are a lot of leaders right now that people want to hold accountable.
Sharaday Howard gets a glimpse at what's replacing his mural in North Philly. The PGA Championship comes to our region in just over a month.
You're going to see some of the best golfers in the world go head-to-head.
Justin Udo got a tour of the course. And a record store in media has made a unique, very local album.
It is a 92-track, double-sided vinyl record that is meant to sum up all things Delaware County and really about the Delaware County lifestyle.
Connor Barkon tells us about the sounds of Delco. All that's ahead on The Week in Philly. We'll dive right in after this.
Avoid the area of Grace Ferry Avenue and 30th Street. There's some kind of collapse there. Just got that in.
We are gathering information. First responders are at the scene of this partial collapse.
This garage, it appears to be five, perhaps six stories high.
There were plumes of dust coming off from debris. It looked like on the left side.
This is horrible. And my heart goes out to the workers who was harmed and injured.
I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, in for Matt Leon on The Week in Philly. A parking garage collapse on Wednesday left three dead and two others injured. Now, we're recording this on Friday, and it is a fluid situation, so tune into our regular KYW newscasts for the latest. But Mike DiNardo was one of the reporters who rushed to the scene, and he joins us now. Mike, let's start with the basics here. Where was this and what exactly happened on Wednesday afternoon?
Sabrina, this was at 30th and Grays Ferry at the site of a 1,000-car parking garage that Children's Hospital was building. It was a seven-story garage under construction, and for some undetermined reason, one of the top levels of precast concrete gave way, collapsing down and pancaking on top of the levels below from top to bottom. One worker was taken from the scene but died, two others injured, and two more. At the time of the collapse when we arrived, they were still missing.
What was happening on the scene when you got there, and who did you talk to?
When I got to the scene, we assembled on the 30th Street side. The corner structure of the garage, the only part that had been visibly built, was surrounded by police and fire crews. No one was visible inside the perimeter of the structure itself. And what struck me arriving there was there was no visible urgent activity. We saw fire personnel and a cherry picker inspecting the damage from the outside, from above, and a drone examining the wreckage. But there was no hub of activity in the rubble. We saw the fire department's collapse response unit even leaving the scene at one point. But the reason there was so little activity was that the building itself was unstable after the collapse, and the city didn't want to risk any further collapse as rescue and recovery workers did their job.
As you mentioned, there were two people who were unaccounted for by the end of Wednesday, and it has since been announced that they are presumed dead. But what do we know about the search that went on for them?
We know the search was delayed because of concerns over the stability of the remaining structure. Drones and robots were used. FEMA-trained search dogs also helped authorities to determine that there were no signs of life in the rubble. Mayor Parker Thursday said the effort had moved from a rescue effort to a recovery effort, but that recovery had to wait until the structure was stable enough. The strategy shifted to a controlled demolition to clear as much as seven stories of unstable concrete away from the area where the bodies were believed to be.
What do we know about the people who died or are presumed dead?
We know those two workers who were initially unaccounted for are members of Ironworkers Local 401, and again, they are presumed dead.
You said we're not really sure, but is there any sense of what may have caused the collapse?
That is the question that OSHA will try to answer. Why that first concrete slab at the top of the building fell onto the slabs below, progressively crushing everything underneath. They will no doubt be looking at the precast concrete slabs that fell. Precast concrete is commonly used in construction. In this case, it's not clear exactly what went wrong, whether a connection failed, whether a slab shifted somehow and collapsed, causing the chain reaction. We just don't know.
Now, there was some controversy around building this garage in the first place. Some residents of Grays Ferry even held a protest back in February. So what were their complaints then?
The residents are members of groups including Philly Thrive, and you may remember them as the group that protested environmental effects of the former Philadelphia Energy Solutions refinery nearby, especially after the explosion and fire in 2019. Members of that same group were opposed to construction of this CHOP garage in the first place. They were concerned about increased car traffic, worsening the air quality in an area that had already suffered enough. CHOP said it was sensitive to the concerns of the neighborhood and that it would add more greenery to the space. The project, though, was moving ahead despite the public protest.
So what's happening with the garage now? Are they still moving ahead and continuing construction?
Yeah, way too early to say. At this point, CHOP hasn't indicated anything right now. We can probably presume, though, that if the project does move forward, it's not going to happen anytime soon while the investigation takes place.
KYW's Mike DiNardo, thanks for stopping by. We will, of course, keep you updated on KYW News Radio on any new developments with this story. The Week in Philly is just getting started, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this.
People are not in a good mood. If you look at consumer sentiment, it's just been a bit of a mess.
How we show up in this moment, how we tell our story to the world, will define what Philadelphia means in 2027 and beyond.
We're back on The Week in Philly. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa in for Matt Leon. And we've been hearing so much about America 250 and all the big events coming to Philadelphia this summer, but they may have been a bit overhyped. New predictions say we might not see as big of a surge in tourism as we've been expecting. Here to tell us more is KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb. So, Pat, this is obviously disappointing news, especially for the hospitality industry. But where are these predictions coming from? Who's making them and what do they think we'll see?
Yeah, this was a surprisingly sobering forecast by a company called Tourism Economics. You know, every year Visit Philly and the Convention and Visitors Bureau does this tourism outlook, and it's usually like a pep rally. You know, it's to get everybody jazzed. So it was really unusual to be sitting there listening to this guy just say how terrible travel this summer is going to be, even in the FIFA World Cup cities, including Philadelphia. He is predicting, yes, there will be an increase over last year, but he said last year was just terrible. So the increase this year, this is the expression he used.
2026 is going to be meh.
How do they come to this prediction? Like, what information are they drawing on? Is there research? Are they looking at like flights or hotel bookings?
Yes, this is this company's business. They look at past trends. They look at current trends nationally and globally. They look at flight bookings, and they're looking at flight bookings, you know, into the future. And then they're looking at how tourism has responded to similar economic conditions in the past. And so, for instance, gas prices are high. That always
means less car travel. And so that's the kind of data point that they extrapolate from.
Yeah. So let's get further into the reasons behind this. You mentioned gas prices. What else is holding people back? And is it specifically about coming to these events in the Philadelphia area, or is this kind of a global travel trend?
Right. It's got nothing to do with us personally. We can't take it personally. Our events are going to be fantastic. So it's not anything Philadelphia is doing. It is gas prices. It is tariffs that are driving prices upward. It is job fears because the economy has not been growing as fast as it was. These are the factors that in the past have led to flat travel. But all is not lost. There are some positive signs too.
Right. So there will be an increase in tourism, you mentioned, over past years. What do you think the impact will be? Still positive for the city, or could it be an issue if the city or businesses are kind of making plans based on a higher expectation than what we get?
I think it will be a net gain for the city. So what Tourism Economics says is that the hotel occupancy rate will go up by almost 3%. And since room rates are up, there will be an 8% increase in revenue. They also point out that international flight bookings to Philadelphia in June, when the FIFA World Cup matches are being played, it's up 12% from last June. And so the city, you know, it will see a bump. It just won't be the kind of bonanza that I think a lot of people were hoping for.
Still plenty of cause for celebration, I would say. Let's try to look on the bright side here.
Yes.
While we're talking about travel, ICE agents that were assisting during the partial government shutdown left Philadelphia International Airport this week. And this was announced at a city budget hearing that you attended. Why did this come up when discussing the budget?
Well, the airport was in front of city council to talk about its budget, and city council members were just curious and they asked about it. And what the acting CEO of the airport said is that Philadelphia was very lucky.
Our relationship with TSA has been really positive. We've had some of the lowest call out rates that were experienced across the country. So we never saw some of the wait times that were being witnessed.
And then when ICE came to help with the lines and so forth, that they were very professional and respectful. There were no problems with them. And then once TSA got funded and everything got back to normal, the ICE agents were gone.
Glad to hear there were no major issues, and hopefully things are starting to get back to normal at PHL. City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb, thanks so much for joining us. We've got much more ahead on The Week in Philly, including why the former World Cafe Live was shut down last weekend and could be closing its doors for good. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
The bartenders who work at the venue had been under the impression that the venue was properly licensed to sell alcohol. The workers had been told by management that had all been sorted out, and they had been told explicitly that they were okay to start selling alcohol again.
A beloved Philly concert venue shut down last weekend. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, in for Matt Leon here on The Week in Philly. The former World Cafe Live, now called World Stage, was forced to close after operating without a liquor license. Here to tell us more is KYW's Matt Coughlin. Matt, this venue has been having issues for a little while now. They're facing bankruptcy and possible eviction. Take us back to what led up to this past weekend.
Going back more than a year now, there was a change in leadership. There were some concerns from the employees, some miscommunications is the way management put it. The employees feel their jobs were at risk. That led at one point to one of the managers who had been there previously under previous leadership to leave. When that person left, a number of the employees were very upset. There was a walkout during a show. Since then, of course, University of Pennsylvania, which owns the building, has filed for eviction. World Stage is fighting that. Secondly, the Real Entertainment, which runs the venue, has filed for bankruptcy.
Now, this past weekend, in the middle of a show, the police show up and say they've been operating without a liquor license and arrest several bartenders and managers. Tell us what happened there.
From what we understand, in October 31st last year, the liquor license for the facility expired. There were some tax issues involved that did not enable that renewal to go through. This past weekend, the bartenders came into work. They were told they could serve alcohol. Previously, the facility had been operating as a BYOB. Apparently, one of the undercover officers ordered a drink, and as soon as that drink was delivered, three bartenders were arrested. From what I understand, they were the bartenders who actually handled the money in that transaction.
So the bartenders didn't know that they didn't have a liquor license. Are they facing any charges, or do they have any fault here?
From what I understand from Matt Renovic, he's with Unite Here Philly. That's a union that represents Philadelphia hospitality workers. He says that they were told explicitly that everything was fine, serve alcohol again.
I think it's normal to expect if your employer tells you that everything's fine, that you take them at their word. We certainly don't think that it's at all reasonable to take those people off to jail the night before Easter.
He says they haven't been charged. At this point, they could potentially face charges. There's some unknowns here.
And you also talked to someone who was there just trying to have a nice night out and go see a show and saw the police come in. What did he have to say?
Mike Ruan had gone. He wanted to see a Grateful Dead tribute band that was playing that night.
Right at 8 o'clock, we walked in the back door. We both kind of looked at each other. And we were like, it's really quiet in here. And then we immediately started to see law enforcement agents.
They noticed law enforcement officers kind of standing around. They went to go into the room where the show was actually going to be and were told that the show had been canceled. It was about 20 minutes before that show was going to happen. As they left the facility. They walked out. They ran into a photographer for the band who said they didn't really know why the show was canceled, but the band had been set up and ready to go.
It's a great room. Whoever built the room put the best of everything in it. The sound is great. The floor plan is great. The setup, the sight lines, everything is great about that room. It's just being mismanaged now.
What happens now? Can the venue reopen? Is that still to be seen?
For now, it's closed until that liquor license can be resolved. I can't see them being open for the long haul. The employees really are hoping that the University of Pennsylvania will bring somebody else in to run the place.
KYW's Matt Coughlin joining us. We should mention you did reach out to the now former CEO, Joseph Callahan, who was kind of at the heart of all this and the new management that came in when this all started. He did not respond. We'll be right back with more on The Week in Philly.
There are sexual abuse allegations against the late labor leader Cesar Chavez, alleging that the Latino civil rights icon groomed and sexually abused girls who worked in the movement back in the 1970s.
I offered the idea to replace the image of Chavez with Dolores Huerta, who was co-founder of the movement. She represents a multitude of people.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, in for Matt Leon. And this week, a mural of political activist Cesar Chavez in North Philadelphia was replaced. Here to tell us why and what's replacing it is KYW's Shara Day Howard. So, Shara, set this up for us. Chavez was a celebrated activist. He co-founded what became the United Farm Workers Union. But some pretty terrible allegations have recently come out against him. So what exactly happened that made people want to replace this mural?
You're right. So a recent report kind of rip-roared through the community of migrants, but also a lot of Philadelphia, across the country, across the world. People are learning from a New York Times report that Cesar Chavez allegedly sexually assaulted not only Dolores Huerta, the co-founder of the union, but also several other women in the midst over the years. So this, of course, upset many people who were really dedicated to his memory.
Now, this mural at 5th and Cambria of Chavez, who decided to change it and what is the thought process there? I mean, how do you sort of grapple with this person achieved such positive change and really stood up for the workers and meant a lot to the community, but also now allegedly did some pretty terrible things? What do you do with this?
I think it's the moment. Everyone's trying to meet the moment. There are a lot of leaders right now that people want to hold accountable. So this is a difficult conversation that the community wanted to address. The community said we need to quickly address the fact that leaders need to be held accountable. So this is a layered conversation, but it's also a timeless conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the community kind of came together around this. There's one muralist who is redoing this mural to be of Dolores Huerta, who you mentioned in the beginning. Tell us a bit about Huerta, who she is, and why they chose her.
So Michelle Angela Ortiz is a local muralist, and really the community said, hey, we want Chavez off of this mural. And this mural smack dab in the middle of the Latino community. And they said, we don't want it. Mural Arts put out a call and said, okay, who can help? And Ortiz said, I've got a plan.
This is a learning opportunity for many to have quick actions to hold our politicians accountable.
The plan will do many things at once and, again, address that difficult conversation, but do it in a responsible and mindful way where, number one, you're able to really hold, again, accountable leaders, but then also recognize the community and the migrant workers and what that really means to the movement, the women in the movement. And that's where Huerta comes in. Dolores Huerta was a really well-known, respected part of this movement, and to ignore what allegedly happened to her, but also her contributions overall, that would be irresponsible. So I think at this point, Ortiz said, okay, so let's do all of these things at once. Let's address the issues at hand, but also let's pay homage to the community and the women who held up this movement as well.
She's a co-founder, right? And then the other thing is that she represents a multitude of people, right? So the movement is not just solely just Chavez, solely just Huerta. The movement is all of the people, all of the farm workers, the families, the mothers, the women who pushed forward.
Yeah, I think it's really important that she's maintaining some of the original artwork and still paying homage, as you said, to the movement in general. Now, tell us a little bit about her relationship to the original artwork and the original artist and how she is incorporating this new work with the beauty that's already there.
So part of the reason she was chosen was also because she paid a lot of attention to the history and legacy of the original artist, Jose Ali Paz, who passed away in 2008 from cancer. This was her mentor, her close friend. She knew the family well. She was very close with Jose Ali Paz and said, this work needs to be maintained, but also his legacy. But we can do all of these things at once. So her process was go into the studio, create something that still maintained the flow, the action, the vibe behind what Jose Ali Paz really wanted to do, which was pay attention to the migrant workers in the movement, while also being able to really see Huerta and to show what she's done for the community, but in this portrait. And she does it all at once.
And now all of this is really having an impact on the Latinx community. The movement means a lot. Chavez used to mean a lot. This is kind of a big deal. What does this all and replacing this represent, particularly for the Latinx community in Philly?
Yeah, this isn't happening in a vacuum. This is happening all across the nation. People are impacted all over the world. People were really dedicated to this movement, and they're not going to throw the baby out with bathwater. And that really translates also to the mural. She's keeping most of the mural, but she's adding aspects of the conversation we need. And again, this conversation is going on all over the world. How do we hold our leaders accountable? And how do we not forsake the entire movement for the actions of one person? Because truly, a movement is created and maintained by the people.
KYW's Sheridan Howard, thanks so much for joining us. And if you want to see that mural, it is at 5th and Cambria, so check that out. We still have more ahead here on The Week in Philly, including a preview of the PGA Championship, which is coming to the area, and an album celebrating the sounds of Delco. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Back at it on The Week in Philly. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, stepping in for Matt Leon this week. And we are a little more than a month out from the PGA Championship coming to Aronimink Golf Club in Newtown Square. KYW's Justin Udo got to tour the club this week to see what visitors can expect, and he's with us now. So, Justin, I have to admit, I know nothing about golf, but I know this is a big deal. So tell me, what is the hype around the PGA Championship? Why is this so big in the golf world, and how many people is it likely to draw to the area?
It kind of says it in the name on why it's so big. It's a championship, and it's the PGA Championship, which is a very long-standing circuit and tournament of players. So what you will get and why it's so popular is because you're going to see some of the best golfers in the world go head-to-head, go at it on a very storied course. We're expected to see around 200,000 people come out to the club, to the course, over a matter of days. And the course at Aronimink is almost 100 years old, and it draws a lot of people, and because one, it has a very beautiful kind of view, it has really great greens, and its upkeep is something that's second to none.
The golf course will be 100 years old in 2028, and all 18 greens are original green sites.
They have hosted a number of large PGA tournaments going back decades. So by them proving themselves time and time again with these big tournaments, they were selected. And this goes back around 3 years when that whenever it was decided they would be the host for this year.
So you got to tour the club this week. You mentioned this a little bit, but let's get further into what it's like there and what makes it truly unique.
When you go to a lot of golf courses, you're used to just seeing the greens, the fairways, the bunkers, the nice things. But what kind of sets it apart now is since early February, they've been hard at work, these different contractors putting up these tents, which are more like pavilions, 200 of them, in fact, around the course, putting up grandstands for people to watch.
We bring a small city to a established historic golf course.
You have a 50,000 square foot tent that has a PGA shop in it. You have a number of different places where people can eat, places where people can get out of the sun, places where people can use the bathroom. You have a number of different tents that people are going to be able to utilize throughout the week and take advantage of and really just have an amazing time on this storied course.
It really does sound like its own little village. It's interesting having a big event like this in the suburbs where they don't usually get so many people, so there isn't a lot of parking or convenient public transportation. Tell me about the parking situation and how people are going to get there.
So what they do is there's a number of different ways that parking is set up. One, you can purchase a parking pass where it can get you a little closer. But two, there are also like designated rideshare spots where rideshares can pick you up and drop you off. There are shuttles that take you from one spot to the next. And so even though it's in the suburbs, there is a lot of work put into looking at how just the riding infrastructure is going to work to get people in and out as smoothly as possible.
So it may be a little bit of a journey to get there, but worth it. Justin, what does this mean for the club and for the region to host the PGA Championship? First, we know there will be a significant economic impact, of course, but also, do you think it could affect how southeastern Pennsylvania in general is kind of viewed in the sports world and the golf world?
So it brings prestige to the club. One, when we talk about money and economic impact for the region, it's expected to bring in about $125 million to the region for that in hospitality and tourism. And when it comes to how sports and how golf is viewed in southeastern Pennsylvania, it's just kind of another notch on the belt, honestly, because the region has shown time and time again, it can host large sporting events of all kinds. And I think that rings true this year because we're seeing the MLB All-Star Game. We're also seeing the World Cup come to town, and we're now seeing this tournament at Aronimink, and the region is no stranger to hosting large golf tournaments at these different clubs.
I think it's great to see the variety of sports that our area is capable and can showcase. You know, it's not just about the Eagles. We all love the Birds, but we've got soccer, we've got golf, we've got everything.
Everything. Yes, you hit the nail on the head with that.
Now, for golf fans, unfortunately, if you snooze, you lose. The event is sold out. But is there any way for fans to get in last minute if this convinced somebody that they've got to see the championship?
The event may be sold out, but hope is not lost. There are still a number of tickets available on the secondary market. There are still tickets available for the practice rounds that happened earlier in the week. And those tickets start at around $90 for the practice rounds. And Sabrina, let me tell you this. Whenever you pay for that ticket to get in, your food and your non-alcoholic drinks are all covered. So if you want to make it a family day at the golf course or just by yourself, you don't have to worry about pulling out that that wallet.
It's a pretty good deal. KYW's Justin Udo, thanks so much for joining us. We've got one more story for you on The Week in Philly about how a local record store has captured the sounds of Delco. We'll tell you what that means in just a minute. Stay with us.
Go ahead.
You sure?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, thanks, somebody go, thanks. Please.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Go Birds.
If that sound is familiar to you, you might live in Delco. This is The Week in Philly. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, filling in for Matt Leon, and that's a track called Guy Stuck Holding Door at Wawa from a very unique album that captures the essence of Delaware County. KYW's Connor Barkon is here to tell us more. Connor, I had so many questions when I heard about these Sounds of Delco album. Is this music? Like, what is on this album?
No music on this album, but it is a 92-track double-sided vinyl record that's being produced by Greatest Hits Record Store and Media that is meant to sum up all things Delaware County and really about the Delaware County lifestyle. So it's humorous. It's kind of tongue in cheek, but there is a mixture of infield recordings along with studio productions to sort of help put this together and tell this story.
Yeah, so you mentioned this comes from Greatest Hits Record Store in Media. Who exactly came up with this idea? I know you talked to the creators, and how did they go about putting this together?
So store manager Jesse Jeanette, along with some coworkers, were actually inspired by sound effects albums. There are like really unique albums that are out there that are just like several tracks of like a very specific type of sound effect, like motorcycle sound effect, or like, you know, a bacon sizzling sound effect or something like that. So that kind of got the gears turning. It got them thinking, you know, why don't we do something like this here? You know, obviously more than just one sound effect, but something that's a little specific to this area, super specific to this area, and really kind of give people who are from Delaware County an opportunity to not only hear stories that are, you know, that relate to them and are relative to things that they grew up with, but also, you know, a chance to laugh at themselves a little bit too.
Look over who's sitting in the second pew. Oh my God, is that Jackie D'Angelo? Since when does she go to church on Sundays?
I don't know. I've only ever seen him on Christmas and Easter nowadays.
Yeah, me too. Oh my God, and look, she's with Steve.
I am a Delco resident. I actually chose to move to Delco a couple years ago, so very relevant to me. I am loving this. We've got everything from like short little sounds called opening an Imperial pizza box at 2 a.m. all the way to watching an Eagles game, of course.
Yo, bro, Birds are looking good today. Hurts slinging it, defense flying around. Super Bowl year, I'm telling you, no one's stopping us. You've got to be kidding me with that call, ref. God, dump this team, flush them down the toilet.
I think it's great. There's just something about Delco that makes this work. I don't know if it's a sense of pride, a sense of humor. And we've seen the area getting more attention on shows even beyond Pennsylvania, like Mayor of Easttown and Task. Connor, what do you think it is about Delco that makes it just so fitting? And like, this is something that, of course, Delco would do this, you know?
So I was born and raised in Delaware County myself. I can say over the years, I've personally developed a sense of Delaware County pride. But I can tell you that there's a brashness to Delaware County. There's a bit of an unapologetic attitude to Delaware County that I think lends itself well to the people who live here and who grew up here. And that's why they kind of like to see their stories told in the media as well. But more than anything, people from Delaware County have a very good sense of humor, and they do like to laugh at themselves, and not just themselves, but things that are quirky in the world. And I do think this album, you know, you can tell that it's sort of told through that lens a little bit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Delco is so easy to make fun of, but it's like only we can make fun of ourselves. You know, like, don't you dare if you're not from here.
Yeah, you can try. But, you know, we are pretty thick skinned and we, you know, probably won't hurt our feelings too much.
So when and where can people get this album?
If you've heard about the album and you do want to purchase it, you can pre-order it now. It won't be available until May 15th. The pre-orders are going very well. Their response has been very positive. So I'm not sure how many albums they have or how many they're going to make. But, you know, if you want one, don't just go to the store and ask for one. It's something that you do want to pre-order ahead of time.
Thanks so much, Connor. Sharing some Delaware County love. It's KYW's Connor Barkon, and that's all we've got on The Week in Philly. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. I'm Sabrina Boyd-Circa, in for our usual host, Matt Leon. Brian Seltzer and I produce this show. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back again next week.